I'm Marcus Brown. This is a Runner's Life podcast. This is a platform for richer conversations that explore the person behind the runner. I discuss the topics that influence us as runners locally, whilst concurrently connecting us to the wider global community. If you found value in the show, please subscribe and share with your community on social media and leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or the platform selected, as it helps the podcast grow. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's head to the conversation. I'd like to welcome Andy Dixon. He's the editor of Runner's World. He's a dad like myself, 22-time marathoner, 6-star finisher like myself, and he did a sub-3-hour marathon once. Great to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for coming to A Runner's Life.
Thanks for having me. It's a privilege.
The reason why I want to speak to you on this podcast is because this series is regarding females' experiences of harassment whilst running. And back in 2017, Runner's World did a feature on this. Can you just tell us a little bit about this?
Sure. We basically had heard of a few examples of runners being harassed. And there were, very unfortunately, there were a couple of cases, thankfully, not in the UK, but in the US, it was of female runners being attacked on the run. So we kind of knew that this was an issue. So we decided to do a big feature on the whole of kind of harassment of female runners, and by harassment that could be anything from catcalling, wolf whistling at the lower level, right through to, as I've just said, the kind of serious being followed or being flashed at, or even being actually attacked. So we did a survey on it in 2017, and we had over 1,000 respondees. And the results shocked us, I have to be honest. You know, I'm a man, so it shocked me because, you know, I have the luxury and the privilege of, if I want to go out for a run on my own, I don't think about my route. I don't think about whether it's night or day. I could run in the dark. And suddenly, I'll go through a few of the findings in a minute, but basically it was a shock to me because it was like, wow, I'd never actually thought of these things before. And of course, being a male runner, I guess I hadn't had to worry about them. And being made aware that lots of women runners do have to worry about these things, and lots of them have actually experienced it. So, I mean, the stats that we found were that 46% of British women had experienced harassment sometimes, at least sometimes on their run. 27% had been followed. 13% had been sexually propositioned while they were out on their run. 3% had been flashed at, and 5% had been grabbed or groped. It's like horrifying figures. You know, just the kind of prevalence and the commonness of it was what hit us. So it was a real shock, and actually, you know, when we were drawing together the results, I came back and was just told it to my wife, who runs also, and she was like, oh yeah, I've had people kind of calling me on a run. It was like suddenly this thing that I'd never thought about, I realized was a really big problem. So I'm kind of happy that we looked at it, it was an education, I guess, and I guess, you know, it's we're just trying to find, having identified that it's a big issue, the next step, of course, is how can we help, how can we, you know, reduce the prevalence and make it not happen. And that's something that's going to take a bit longer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get into next steps, but I think it's really interesting what you spoke about, especially with the stats as well. And what's clear is it's a really common occurrence. And like yourself, as a man, you don't really think about going for a run. You just think, night, day, whenever, just go for a run. And you spoke about, obviously, you know, your wife as well and experiences for her. Did your perspective, I know you spoke about that, but are there any other areas that your perspective changed following the results and just finding out a little bit more about how prevalent this is?
Well, it was just, I guess it just, the main, as I said, the main thing that it changed for me personally was that it reminded me, not reminded me, it made me realize that running free, by that I mean running where and when you want to, I'd taken that for granted. I just thought, well, running's forever. You know, that's the great thing about running. That's something we all agree with, that it's anyone can do it. It doesn't take a lot of kit. You can take it at your own pace. You can go into it as deeply and as seriously as you want, as in like running marathons and sub threes, or you can just run for fun or for fitness or for headspace and all of those things. And I guess it made me realize that for some people, it's not that free. And you know, for women, even those that haven't directly experienced harassment, I guess would possibly be worrying or conscious of it happening. So by that I mean, you know, they might not choose to run at night. They might carefully pick routes that didn't go into very isolated kind of or out of the way places, and all of those things. I've, as a male runner, I've never had to worry about or think about or second guess. So that's what it brought home to me, was that actually that's a privilege, and it's a crying shame that women have to think like that, because I don't think they should have to think like that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And some of the comments that I've read online, some of the guys that say, you know, it's not me, or it's not guys, or it's just banter, or it's a bit of fun. It's not. I mean, I was speaking to someone, they were saying, like, you know, that's one comment, but then they go back and are thinking about that for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they sort of internalize it, like it's their fault. So they have to kind of sort of restrict themselves and shrink themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I would say about harassment is that it's never the woman's fault. You know, that's the key point to emphasize. You know, it's not about what you're wearing on your run or where have you run to. It's never the woman's fault, it's the harasser's fault. That's why it happens, and that's the key point to have in mind. And I think that the point you make about it's kind of dangerous, I think, that, you know, I suppose the I don't want to call it low level harassment, because it underplays it, because harassment is upsetting. But this idea of banter, I think, is quite dangerous, because there's a lot, not just in terms of the harassment of female runners, in other environments and scenarios where lots of offensive, niggly comments can be attempted to be passed off under the umbrella of it's just banter, when actually it isn't. You know, it might be offensive. Just because you're trying to say it with a giggle doesn't make it not. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
you know, I've thought about it a fair bit. There was an occasion last year where during a race in America, where there was you probably remember it, there was a female television reporter. She wasn't a runner, but she was reporting on a marathon in Savannah, I think, in Georgia. She was doing a live telecast, runners streaming behind her, and it was just a kind of classic, here I am doing the, I can't remember the name of the race, but here I am, and everyone's having a good time. Lots of people waving behind her, as people do. And then one guy comes up, and you can't actually see clearly because she's got her back to the camera, but it later came out, she said immediately afterwards that he smacked her on the behind. And, you know, he long story short, he was caught. He got charged with like, I think, assault. Had to pay a fine and do community service. But the fact that he was willing to do that on camera, he obviously thought that there was nothing wrong if I just slap this TV reporter's behind, because he was doing it on camera. Do you know what I mean? The proof was actually there. And I think that's the problem with a lot of like verbal harassment, is that the men that are doing it actually don't think that they're doing anything wrong. And that's kind of a bit insidious and dangerous to me. I mean, clearly there's more serious levels of harassment where people are being followed or propositioned. And I think you would imagine that the perpetrators in those examples know that they're doing something wrong. It doesn't make it right, of course, but you know that they're clearly transgressing. I suppose at the kind of the banter level, I think that's the area that is probably easiest to fix in a way, because it's like it's not banter, it's harassment, it's upsetting, and it can make the victims or the targets of it feel immensely uncomfortable.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think, yeah, definitely the low-level stuff definitely needs work.
Yeah, I think we all, you know, it's, I suppose we should say that it's not just a running problem, it's a social problem. So it's more wide-ranging and complex than just running. But yeah, on the basic level of what, you know, what can male runners do to help? It's certainly that if you witnessed one of your running mates or friends just outside of running making kind of lewd comments or suggestive comments to a woman, then obviously you need to call them out on it and say, you know, that's not okay. Even if it's kind of passed off as banter, it's not right. You know, and I think we all just need to be kind of allies to women runners when you know, if we're seeing this stuff happening, then we need to stand up and call it out where we see it.
Yeah, totally. Because you got to think, we all came from a woman. You know, we've probably got you know, someone that we know is close to us as a woman as well. So it really doesn't really make sense to sort of have that little level of disrespect. And I think you're right, men need to call it out, but I think as well it probably needs to go a bit further as well. I think there's education as well, because it makes me think, like, for example, I work in a corporate environment in my day-to-day job, and we have to do things like unconscious bias training,
yeah,
or things like that. And you just think, well, if we can do that, if your employer can make you do that, then why can't we do that as a society? In terms of, sort of role playing, just examples, and just training, because it's obviously something is not working at some level. I know there's some proposals for education for the youth, but I also think, you know, as adults, there needs to be some sort of education there, some form.
I totally agree. I mean, because I've had unconscious bias training too, and it was really helpful. I guess, you know, in a corporate environment, there probably will be kind of training available on gender harassment, but I suppose the problem is that it's that when it becomes a wide social problem. I mean, I think that the way to probably, as you mentioned, I think education when people are younger in schools, kind of, you know, to show respect, not just for women but for everyone. I mean, I just think it's kind of odd that people do that. Yeah, I mean, I was watching it again, and there was it was in America. There's a piece, a bit of a surveillance video of a woman who was running around a lake in, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in America. And although you don't see it on the video, she kind of said that as she was running towards this male runner coming at her from the other direction, she could just see him fiddling with his shorts, and she thought that maybe he was going to, you know, have a pit stop, but actually he flashed her. And the video shows her, like, rather than just run past shocked, she actually ran back and confronted him about it. I've read lots of advice on what people should do when they're confronted with behavior like this. And generally the advice is not to intervene. You know, I think she did right to call it out. I think she basically grabbed the guy and called the police. But that's not always the right answer, because obviously I think the general advice in terms of safety protocol is to not progress it to a physical confrontation, to verbally object and to call attention to other bystanders if they're around. Yeah, I mean, it's it, And I think bystanders as well have a role to play, because I think harassers, it's a power play for harassers. It's kind of about putting, you know, feeling like they're in control and putting women at a disadvantage and on the back foot. So I think whenever anyone, whether runner or not, witnesses this behavior, I think you don't have to physically intervene and put yourself at risk, but often just verbally intervening, like just shouting, like saying that's not all right, or leave them alone, that's enough to disrupt that kind of that scenario. Or even distraction techniques, like, you know, going over to the person who's being targeted and ask them for the time, or ask them for directions, or pretend that you know them and that you're their friend. So there are things that can be done that are on the spot. But yeah, I mean, I think, as you say, Marcus, the how do we stop it happening in the first place is a wider and deeper problem, and I'm not sure that there are that many easy answers. It's basically just we've got to make it clear that this behaviour is not to be accepted.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. What you mentioned before, another guest mentioned something that happened in the States where someone was being attacked, a woman was being attacked, and the bystanders didn't do anything. Ultimately, looking wider, I mean, this is all of our problems. And I think until it becomes all of our problems, then things won't really change. It'll kind of stay the same, and this acceptable low-level banter and silence will just continue moving into other sort of forms, which isn't really what should happen.
Yeah, I think that's you're right. This is all of our problems. It's not just for, I think that's where men, the role that men have to play is to kind of step up and know that this isn't or shouldn't just be something that women runners have to worry about. It should be all of our concerns. So as I said, you know, calling out behavior, intervening where possible, and just kind of supporting women runners. I think, like I said, running, the whole thing about running is it's meant to be universal and accessible to all. And I think when it isn't, it's disappointing.
Yeah. I think running's a funny one, because sometimes it can come across like it's a sort of separate utopia, or sometimes people try and keep it separate. And it makes me think of something separate to what we're discussing today, where recently with, you probably know this anyways, with Lazarus Lake, he did these virtual race across Tennessee. And there's one guy, Ben Chan, and he basically used his social platform to talk about some homophobic and racist harassment that he'd incurred, and to support sort of the Black Lives Matter movement. And basically this post got removed. Their response was basically like, look, we agree 1,000% of what you're saying, but this is not the place for political posts. And it's almost like, is that really true for running? Because for me, I feel sometimes running is an act of almost rebellion, or an act of freedom. And how do you keep, and where's the line drawn between keeping running free from everything else that happens?
Well, I don't think there is a line, really, because running, I mean, we're both disciples of running, Marcus, but I, you know, I think that running is, it's hard to separate running from life, really, because it for me, it certainly seeps into lots of different areas of my life. Like, you know, when I can't run, my mental health starts, you know, I just start to get a bit stressed and my headspace goes a bit off kilter. So absolutely, it's a part of my life. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't think talking about whether it's Black Lives Matter or female harassment, I don't think it should be considered political. It's like Lewis Hamilton was saying today that his support for it's not a political matter, it's a human rights matter. And I thought that was a really good and actually very true, that these things are about human rights. It's not about politics. They're just about people, you know, whatever stripe they're from, just wanting equal treatment and the right not to be harassed or discriminated against. So I think, you know, it's all too easy, I think, to put discussions like this in the under the umbrella of like political chat, but to me it's not. It's just about common humanity.
Yeah, and I guess when you look beyond, say, running or anything else, you're essentially running from A to B as quickly as possible. But beyond that, we are humans and we all connect. And you think, well, you know, what's that bond like? And if that bond is broken somehow, then it does have an impact on some of the other things that we attach importance to, which probably aren't as important as human relationships, community, etc.
Mm. Yes, and you know, runners are running so wide and universal, and there's so many different types of runner. But equally, everyone who runs is part of a great big running tribe, and I think we should all kind of try to look out for each other a bit more, and you know, when we see this kind of stuff happening, do our best to call it out and say it's not acceptable.
Yeah, totally agree. And also, we've spoken a little bit about things that could be done in terms of moving forward, in terms of awareness, education. Obviously, it's wider than running. And we spoke about the 2017 feature. Can you sort of tell us about some of the next steps moving forward?
Yeah, we're planning to revisit this next year. So we'll do another survey and see what the results of that are. And, you know, maybe, hopefully, things will be a bit better, but my sense is that they probably won't be, unfortunately. And I say that just because I think compared to 3 years ago, and this is not just, I think just generally, the climate has emboldened lots of people to feel like they are able to say whatever they like and to have no consequences. You know, the online discourse and social media has become very polarized. And I think we, you know, unfortunately, we're just living in times where common decency, I'm sounding like my granddad, but common decency, I think, is not quite where it was a few years ago. I don't know why that is. You could link it to lots of things, but anyway, I'm digressing. We are going to revisit this and look at the issue again, probably in spring of next year, and also just bring together like a toolkit of advice and helpful resources that people can use to either reduce the risk or what they should do if God forbid it actually happens to them.
Yeah, I'm just shaking my head to this in agreement. Obviously, you can't see it because we're on a podcast, what you're saying, because people do say some outlandish stuff on social media platforms and the internet in general. And you're thinking, would you be happy to say that out loud to say your mother, your sister, your colleagues, or whatever? It's just like, when you read it out loud, it just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I'm not here to bash social media because it's evidently got many, many positives. But I think one of the negatives is that
people aren't accountable for what they say.
Yeah, especially when people can write behind it, you know, write behind a pseudonym. I guess that gives people a sense of emboldenment to feel like they can say what they want without any kind of recourse. And I think for the majority of people, lest we forget, most people are not abusive on social media or in real life. Then you've got people who might be abusive on social media, but as you say, wouldn't say those things in real life. And then unfortunately, there's still a kind of, hopefully a tiny minority of people who probably are abusive on social media and do say bad and harassy things in real life. So yeah, I think all of these things are kind of linked together, and I just don't feel like we're not as tolerant a society as we were a few years ago. You know, the obvious, Brexit hasn't helped. Everything's Brexit's fault, but do you know what I mean? I think just the times we're living in, and you know, this is not an excuse, but we're going through a time of like cultural change, I think, and I don't think that the culture that we're living in is really geared towards consideration is a very macro, on a very macro level. And I think that that filters down in all kinds of different ways. So, you know, I think what we need is another Olympics.
Another 2012, yeah.
Yeah, because that, you know, that I'm probably romanticising it, but everything was, you know, everyone together and games makers. And
everyone was so friendly as well, which yeah. is not so typical for London.
Yeah, exactly. It really
says hello to you.
Honestly, it did feel like it changed the kind of the standard demeanour, you know, the stereotype demeanour. You know, we both live in London. Of the, you know, of Londoners on the tube, like looking at the floor and not chatting, and for those few golden weeks, everything changed. You know, people were happy and engaging with each other, and it felt great to be British and proud. You know, and we were telling the people, the world, about our NHS in the opening ceremony. What a moment that was! Anyway, I'm just starting to romanticize it. I mean, I think, you know, that's where we're at, but you know, times change, don't they? And that would be the hope, that you know, we move into a time where just basic decency and consideration for other people's feelings starts to come to the fore again.
Yeah, I always feel like this is a running analogy, isn't it? I think 2012 was probably like mile one of the marathon. We feel great, and now we're probably like mile 20, 2020, and we just feel rough.
Yeah,
it's like, when will this end?
It does feel like that. It feels like we're hitting the, you know, just in many with COVID and everything. It does feel like we're hitting the wall, and we just got to focus on taking one step at a time and just hoping that we get through it at some point and soon.
Yeah, totally agree. And one last point that I want to ask as well, in terms of the proposed idea for the new feature in terms of the angles that you're going down, is it worth looking at back at men as well and just kind of putting it back to them and almost calling us out and just being like, guys, you need to do this as well, you need to step up as well, rather than, because I feel like obviously women's voices need to be heard as well, but at the same time men are really a main cause of the problem, and I feel like we kind of really need to be have like a mirror held back to us as well.
Totally, yeah. Totally agree. Like I said at the start, this harassment, which is always from men towards women, it's not the woman runner's fault. She's got a right to run where she wants and run in what she wants. So harassment happens because of men. So, you know, in terms of the fixing of it, absolutely. Absolutely. We've got to look at ourselves. Men have got to question themselves, and you know, even I'm sure the majority of men aren't harassers, but I guess they've got to then just try and be supportive and allies to women, and if and when they see that kind of behavior, just call it out, because absolutely I don't think it's fair that the onus on trying to combat this falls onto women. It's for all of us, and actually probably more on men, because as I said, men are the perpetrators.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And a great way to wrap up. And I just want to acknowledge you first. Thank you for coming on the podcast and talking about this with me. And also previously, thank you for the chats that we've had in regards to Black Lives Matter, because I appreciate you getting a lot of comments about different things. So it's great to have these conversations with you, and appreciate you coming on the show, Andy.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So this is going to be a short debrief following the chat with Andy. Andy, thank you for coming on the podcast and just talking about the 2017 survey and resulting article, and confirming about the proposal to follow this up for an updated survey and article for next year. What's come across in this conversation and the previous three conversations is harassment isn't the woman's fault, it's the harasser's fault. And when we look at the running community, you know, running should be free, it should be accessible, it shouldn't just be a privilege for a select few. And if you've got this far, thank you to listening to all four episodes on this special edition, talking about the experiences of women whilst running. And I've quoted her before, the late great Dr. Maya Angelou, and she says something along the lines of, once you know better, you do better. It's not about going back in the past and berating anyone. It's about looking at where we are now and just making better choices. I think women are doing a lot and they are carrying a lot of the responsibility. And I think for us guys, we need to just look at ourselves and just think, how can we be better allies moving forward? Simply because this isn't a problem that women should carry alone. It should be everyone's problem. And until it is, nothing's really going to change. I'm not perfect and I'm not here to judge all men. However, starting from where you are, you've got to ask, what are you going to do to be a better ally moving forward? Thank you for listening to this episode of A Runner's Life. If you found value in this episode and want to support the show, please share with your community, post on your social media channels, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. If you want to get in touch with me or see what I'm up to, you can follow me on my Instagram page at TheMarathonMarcus. Your time is valuable, so thank you for spending your time listening to this episode of A Runner's Life podcast.